Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Revamp your home this May with our fresh new curtain and bedding designs. Discover comfort and style for every room.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Is our text number. As you heard yesterday, we start getting calls about the week that was 50 years ago and the horror that was in Dublin on that particular day. It visited many, many other towns, villages and townlands, especially in Northern Ireland over the previous years and subsequent years, unfortunately. Remember, the majority of people killed in the Troubles were civilians. The vast majority of people injured in the Troubles were civilians. Ida White. Ida, good afternoon.
Oh, good afternoon, Joe.
How are you?
I'm not too bad, thank God.
I'm told this is the first time in a long time that you won't be able to go to the commemoration on Friday.
Correct. Yes, that's correct, because my back is very sore. I fell and injured myself, and my back is very sore, so I won't be able to go down, unfortunately.
Yeah, but you were there, unfortunately, on May the 17th, 1974. Where were you, Ida?
I went into town, and I was... It happened, most. God, I never expected that to happen.
Yeah.
I was heading home, and I was heading down for the bus and with my daughter, and we were walking down Earl Street, down into Talbot Street, yeah, when it happened.
And you remember what happened?
Yes, I remember, because we were walking down Earl Street, and we were walking past. Actually, I heard a bang, and I thought it was the one of the stores pulling down their blinds. You know,
the shutters.
And they'd make a bang, you know, when they got to the bottom. So I thought that was one of them up behind me as I walked down.
Yeah.
And actually, it turned out that was Parnell Street bomb going off. Because the Parnell Street bomb went off just before the...
2 minutes.
Yeah. So and I walked on down, and I was walking down, and we were walking down. I was near Guiney's. Guiney's was on my right-hand side going down on the corner.
Yeah.
And I was on the left-hand side going down. And I remember passing this Singer sewing machine company had a place there.
Still there, yeah.
And I was just passing there when the bomb went off. Now, when we didn't know. It just happened, and I just remember being floating up in the air.
You remember floating up in the air?
Yes. Just suddenly, I was floating up in the air. And I didn't know what was happening. I didn't know. God, it was funny.
And could you see, Ida, as you were floating up in the air with that?
Well, when I
with
went
the explosion.
Up, it was just, God, it's so hard to describe to this day. Because I just went up, and I was like nothing around me. It was just like being in just this little space I was going up in, and I was there kind of floating.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly I was on the ground, and I was in a ball on the ground, thawed on the ground. And as it turned out, I was facing back the way I had come.
Okay. Towards O'Connell Street, basically.
Yeah, that's right. I was facing the way I had come towards O'Connell Street. And I looked beside me for my daughter, who would have been on the inside of me. And she wasn't there. And there was people. I didn't know what the heck was happening. And then I looked around, and she was on the other side. And she was with her head in the ground.
Good God. She was only four, also called Ida.
She was just gone four.
Yeah, okay. So you could see her across the street. You remember the two of you were walking on the side, the pavement where the Ford Escort, the bomb car, the car bomb had been parked. So you were right beside her, but you looked across after you fell to the ground. You looked across and you saw Ida.
No, she wasn't across. I didn't. I looked just around. She was on the same path as me.
Okay.
She was in the same path as me, but I was facing the wrong way. She was still facing down.
Okay.
And I was facing back. So when I turned around, she was still there in the same place, but she was with her head in the ground, her face in the ground.
And were you able to get to her?
Yes, she was just a few feet ahead of me. And I picked her up, and I'll never forget what I saw when I picked her up. It was dreadful, dreadful. But I couldn't think. I couldn't think. I just picked her up, and I didn't know what was happening. And it's funny how your mind goes at times like that. You don't know what's happening. It was just a total peculiarity. I didn't know what was happening. And of course, oh God, when I picked her up, and she had a big lump of metal stuck on her face, and a big spike coming out of it, and it was right up into her eye. I thought her eye was gone.
Yeah.
Oh, it was dreadful, and I could hardly stand. I could hardly stoop up. I was stooping, and I could hardly stand. I couldn't stand straight, and I just could hardly walk. So with that, everybody was rushing down, back down the way we'd come, and they were all running back down. And so I just got her, and I had a basket of things, and it was stuck out in the ground. So I picked it up and got her and managed to get her to walk back down.
My God.
And there was people lying on the ground, and I presumed they couldn't get up. Other people all rushing back down. The place was a nightmare. The whole street was just all in a nightmare. I remember that distinctly. And, God, it was dreadful. I didn't know where I was going, but I was just facing with the way everybody else was going.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have time to think where you were going.
But how did your four-year-old, baby Ida, how did she walk with such injuries?
I don't know. She just managed to walk. She had injured her. It turned out she had injured one of her legs as well. But, you know, we managed. Well, we just kind of barely scrabbled ourselves along, and she never cried. The amazing thing was, I think she was in such shock that she never cried or anything. She just looked. She could hardly look anyway. With the eye was all pushed up, and the other eye was okay. But she was. Oh, God, I never forget it. Yeah,
How did you get to hospital, Ida?
Well, we were walking back up the street, and I remember a woman in a white coat coming out of the shops. The people that were in the shops that were able to, I suppose, some of the shops were bombed as well, blown up.
Yeah.
But the ones further up, back in Earl Street, up that way, and I think she was a chemist or something. Anyway, she came out and she waved at me to come towards her.
Right.
And I managed to go in then. She brought me in. And I remember, I don't know what they were doing there. I was standing there at the counter. I was all folded up. And for a few minutes, we weren't long there. We were there, and she I think she probably rang. And when she came in outside the door then, and she brought me out to a guard car. It was a guard car.
Yeah.
There was a guard in it, and they put us in the Garda car, and the Garda car took us to Temple Street Hospital. Oh gosh, it was a nightmare.
And what were your injuries, Ida?
Pardon?
What were your injuries?
My injuries were metal.
Yeah.
I burst an eardrum. My right eardrum was burst, and there was pieces of metal in my body, all around my face. My hair was all blown off me. And when you think of it now, the hair was all scorched off me and standing up in bits. Yeah. And I had been in town, and I'd been to Marks and Spencer to have a hairdo. My hairdo.
Peter Marks, yeah.
Oh, Peter Marks. Yeah. Did I say Marks and Spencer?
Yeah.
No.
Brilliant.
Peter Marks.
Okay.
Peter Marks. It was in O'Connell Street, and I had gone in there and had my hair done.
Yeah.
And there I was, and I wasn't long
little,
with the hairdo.
Little did you know.
But I came out but that was it, yeah.
Stay with us, Ida. I'll talk to your daughter now, Ida Bourne. Ida, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Well, how were you? What is your memory of today, Ida?
Yeah,
You're 4 years of age.
That's it, Joe. Well, it's a black and white silent movie to me. That's kind of the way I've remembered it. And as Mam explained, I just remember, I don't remember it happening. I just remember getting up off the ground and turning to Mom, and the darkness. I just remember darkness and so smoky and, well, foggy is what I would have thought, foggy. I didn't even know it was smoke, you know?
Yeah.
And like ashes everywhere and pure devastation on the road. And I couldn't, I remember thinking, what is all this, you know? And then, like Mom said, we just kind of kept moving then. I mean, when I got up first, I was like, where is Mom? Naturally, yeah, I know. I remember that feeling. But saw her. And we went and, like Mom said, we kind of moved our way down the street. And I do remember the white coats. I always remember going, what's this? And people waving. And it's only from saying to Mom afterwards, why was there white coats on the street?
Yeah.
And she filled in the gaps for me over the years of what my recollection was of the day. And I remember being in, whether it was a chemist, I think it was
yeah,
a chemist,
yeah.
And administering, I remember big white swabs trying to come up to my face. And then it kind of flashed to being in the back of a car. And I remember lying in the car, Mom being beside me, and two black figures in front, which then occurred, you know, I was like, how come I wasn't in an ambulance? What's this black car, Mom?
Because
we went in the squad car, Ida. We didn't go in an ambulance.
Of course, yeah.
And that's, these things made sense years later, you know.
And Ida, when, as a four-year-old, do you remember any pain?
No. Like I say, it was like that silent movie. There was no sound. There was no pain. There was nothing. Was actually just a void of nothing. It was just like pictures happening around me. And then I just remember being in hospital, in the ward in the hospital. And I've more memories from hospital than really than live action from the hospital. I did not like the hospital at all. Because you can imagine being four.
Yes.
Your mom and dad didn't stay with you then.
Yeah.
They didn't know where I was, what was happening.
And did you
come very sad?
Yeah, did you come to the realization, Ida, of the extent of your injuries in your face, especially near your eye?
Yeah, well, I did when I got a bit older. You know, at the time, no, I don't remember processing that.
Yeah.
But I do remember then going to school, and there's a bit of looking, and you know that goes on because you know. The innocence of a child will just say what they say, and that's it, you know. And that then transferred to growing up and being teased, and you know, being called Scarface and whatnot. But I mean, that was difficult, and you know, it did make me stronger. I have to say, as a person, and you know, it shaped me to be who I am today. To be very honest, Joe.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But I had the injury in my leg as well. Then as well, my face.
But I hear your mother describe her finding you.
Yeah,
and your mother was seriously injured as well.
I know. I don't know how my mom, you know, my mom was actually pregnant at the time as well.
Yeah.
So I don't know how she did it. Like looking back, it's miraculous. It's pure miracle that we survived. It really is.
Now, it's miraculous as well that your eye was actually saved.
I know. I mean, it was very high up beside it. Obviously, as I got older, it moved along my face, you know, as you get older and you grow into it. But it was very, very close to my eye, all right. But Professor Mann did an amazing job. I mean, I owe it to him on the job he did on the day.
Surgeon.
He was the surgeon who operated at the time. Who I remember revisiting at around the age of 12 to see... was there anything else we needed to do? We wanted to get him before he retired.
Okay.
And we decided to stick with it and then see in the teenage years if things need. But I actually haven't had any further surgeries. Okay. I did get the option in my 30s, and because I was thinking of old age, you know. I said, no, do you know, I'm happy as I am. I'm going to be making a fresh scar, and the scar is there from what happened, and I've lived through it, and I've come out the other side. So let's just leave it as it is.
And do you ever say to yourself, "How did I live through it?" Given you were at the heart of that horror.
I know, in the middle of it all. how, I mean, people say we were in a vacuum of sorts, and
I
just don't know how we survived it. We were so close to the bomb, like where the car was, and I still can't believe it, you know.
Yeah.
Really.
And I go back to your mother now, Ida, also.
Yeah, sure.
Ida, have you still got pains and injuries from 50 years ago?
Well, no, the only pain the pain I've always had was in my back. And afterwards it was very strong for some time, and then it, over the years it just, you know, went less and less and less. And but it's been always kind of there as a backache, like.
Yeah.
And, you know, I suppose I grew used to it, and, you know, I just put a cushion behind me sometimes when I'd be out somewhere or whatever, but I never regarded it as an injury, you know.
Okay.
I suppose, you know, you just got on with your life and things happened in life and all the rest, so you just forgotten about that being the cause of it, you know.
And I know you've gone in every year, Ida, but Ida Bourne, it was hard at times going back for people to keep the memory and keep reminding the country of the horror of that day, wasn't it? There was a memorial once a year on May the 17th, but there were some people who kept it, like yourselves, kept it going and kept reminding people of the horror that was in it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I want to bring in Joe McMahon, because there was an incident mentioned yesterday. Stay with us, Ida, and Ida. Joe McMahon, you want to remember a man called John Walsh, whose name is inscribed on the memorial in Talbot Street. He's near the bottom of the list. He was aged only 27. And you worked in Cadbury's. Tell us about that day, Joe.
Yes, how are you, Joe? Glad to be speaking to you.
Likewise.
So I got a job in Cadbury's that week, and we were just practicing on the machines and that. On the Friday, we were to go on 3 to 11 the next week, and we were to go on 3 to 11, and as we were finishing up, it says, Mr. Walsh wants to speak to you about health and safety.
Okay.
And we didn't know who the chap was and that. So about 20 of us went down into the room before we probably finished up the day.
Yeah.
And he was there, and a very nice lad. And about, I was 33, he was about 27. And he said, well, I just want to tell you about machines and putting your fingers in machines or leaving them lying on with electricity, the whole lot. And he went through the whole lot and talking away. And just before we left, he said, I have a little, there was no video then, I have a little film here.
Okay.
I want to show you. And he says, about health and safety, and the name of the film was This Couldn't Happen to Me. And he says, these are things that happen to people. And obviously there was actors on it and that, you know. And so about fellas putting their hands in the machine and getting caught with the sleeves and all that. And he says, now, lads, he says, that's it. It was only 5 minutes. And now that's that. But he says, health and safety is the main thing. And good luck, lads, he says, and safety at your work next week. And we left at that time. And I believe when I went in the Monday to start work at 3 o'clock, the women told me that John Walsh was blown up, gone by goinies in his car. There's an inordinate of it. He had a destiny, Joe, with goinies, you know.
Yeah. And the video he showed you that day, the day he died, was, and he was very conscious, obviously, and skilled in health and safety. This Couldn't Happen to Me.
This Couldn't Happen to Me was the name I think it was a little film, actually, you know, rather than a video. But This Couldn't Happen to Me was the name. And he says, anything can happen to anybody.
Yes.
Never think that something can't happen to you.
Yeah.
And I thought it was the ordinary of it, Joe. And to make it the story, I got the army lorry in from Cadbury's into Connolly Station. The bus were on strike. Went into Grangers to see my father and have a pint. Mm-hmm. And bang, the man said immediately, that's a bomb. And we went outside, smoke rising. And I says, I'm not going up near there. And this man came running in. He was all dust on him and everything. He says, don't go up near there. He says, this is an awful sight. So they got him a glass of brandy and sat down. And about 10 minutes later, my sister had rang. Is my dad there?
Okay.
And I said, yes. He was only at the passing Goinies. He went every day to the Procathedral for the Mass,
yeah,
at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
He was only at the passing a couple of minutes, Joe, and down to Grangers. It was only a couple of 100 yards from the bomb. So there you go. That was.
And as you know,
that was my day of it, Joe. Huh?
But as you know, Joe, a number of people who were killed were from Sheriff Street,
Another thing about Sheriff Street, well, I wasn't living there, I was living in Finglas,
yeah,
but in the flats, the largest mansion flats, there was little shops there, and so nobody could own the shops. So my mother, that's where we were born and reared, in Sheriff Street.
Yeah, yeah.
And my mother went into this little shop. Deirdre Doherty was a little girl who had rented it, and she was there. My mother was so familiar with her. And when I went down, I had little Gary making communion the next day, and I went down to Sheriff Street. My mother was in floods of tears. She says, little Deirdre was blown up outside Goinies with a baby, 9 months old,
baby,
ready
yeah.
to, and so the baby was killed with Deirdre. My mother was like one of the family, Joe, that died, you know.
Yeah, and Baby Doherty, who on that particular day, Colette was her full name, Doherty had gone, she'd been in town with the baby and indeed her young daughter, Wendy.
Yeah.
And they went up to, she was in town, she went up to Roche's Stores, of course, everyone did those days.
Yeah.
And then she went up for her appointment in the rotunda at the top of O'Connell Street. And the rotunda said to her, this was Friday afternoon, they said, Mrs. Doherty, you go home now and come straight back here. That baby is due today. It'll
God
come today.
Mighty.
And
you know
she
what?
Said, I have to bring Wendy home in the pram, obviously.
Ah, Lord.
And that was...
Well, I'll tell you one thing, Joe. My mother was broken-hearted because we only lived beside the shop, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone knew, everyone in Sheriff Street. But she said, you know, she just never got over it, you know, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know. But that was my experience. But poor John, I only found out that Monday that John Walsh, that chap, I only knew him for an hour or two,
yeah,
so
of course,
I wouldn't have had any memories, Joe, of him. I believe another woman in Cabarets was blown up too. I see it in the paper there. I didn't know, some woman, Morris or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Dorothy we were talking about, she was talking to us. To us yesterday, and Joe, that I'm thinking like this couldn't happen to me, and what John Walsh was saying, take every precaution you can. Don't have a necktie when you're going near a machine. Be very careful where you put your.
Yeah.
But the tragedy of what happened, John Walsh, is there was no way he could have prevented it because these were random, no warning car bombs.
And I got off the Army lorry at Connolly Station and went into Granger to see my father.
That day,
so that chap probably drove by me and he was heading for Crumlin and that, you know. So I just couldn't get over it, Joe, when I heard the woman saying it to me. Health and safety. Well, my God, you know.
Yeah.
So that was my memory,
okay,
Joe.
Good to hear from you, and it'll be a difficult week for some, difficult days, but difficult week for so many people on the 50th anniversary. And I know Ida wants to thank someone in particular who's kept the memory alive and the campaign alive. And we'll do that after this break. Joe at rt.ie 51551.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Revamp your home this May with our fresh new curtain embedding designs. Discover comfort and style for every room.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And I know, Ida Bourne, you want to mention Margaret, yeah.
Yeah, well, first of all, I want to thank Mum and Dad. I mean, without them, pillars of strength, and just got me through everything and raised a family of five and amazing, just amazing parents. But I also want to thank the Justice for the Forgotten and in particular Margaret Irwin, who worked so hard. And I want to make a special mention as well to the late Barney O'Dowd, who himself a survivor of the Troubles in Ballydougan and worked tirelessly for justice, So I want to appreciate everyone involved, and thank you for keeping things going.
And Barney O'Dowd only died, what, about 2 months ago, was it?
Late Barney O'Dowd. And yeah, I just wanted to give a special mention to him. Amazing man. And I had the pleasure of meeting him.
Yeah.
And would you believe it's a small world? His daughter works alongside me.
Yeah.
So, it, you know, it's just...
And Barney, yeah. was he 102?
He was almost 101.
Yeah.
He was just shy of 101.
Because I met his family about 5 months ago. And
I've... amazing family.
...written and talked about the story. And Martin Doyle has written about that story so powerfully in his book. Martin Doyle of the Irish Times. Thank you for remembering Barney, and indeed Barney's brothers, sons, who were murdered in the Troubles as well.
Yeah.
Margaret Irwin. Margaret, good afternoon again. How are you, Margaret?
Good afternoon, Joe. I'm very well, thank you.
Oh, that's good. When did you set up Justice for the Forgotten, Margaret?
Well, we set it up in January of 1996. We had been working on it. I had been with a couple of family members from 1993. As I always say, the catalyst for the campaign was the Yorkshire TV documentary, Hidden Hand, The Forgotten Massacre.
Yeah.
And so a few of us had got together, and then we managed to get a businessman on board, the late Hugo Flynn, and he financed the lawyers. He put a small amount of money on the table, and we were able to take on our solicitor at the time, Greg O'Neill, and Cormac O'Doulacon, who's now a senior counsel.
Yeah.
And we began from there. So I've been working with it ever since.
And
can I just say, sorry,
Joe, for interrupting. Yes, please do.
Margaret, thank you so much for setting that up. That was actually the year I got married, and I remember Margaret getting in touch with us all. And it actually woke everything up. It was just like getting a voice and not just get on with your life. And it meant so much to my mum and I that we were being recognised and the victims of the bombings being recognised. And support
thank you,
campaign wholeheartedly.
Yes,
thank you so much for all you do.
And I look forward to seeing you on Friday.
Me too. Me too. Thank you, Margaret.
And what's obviously, Margaret, and I presume even I know the crowd will be much bigger than normal, but I hope that that people, I know people will respect the survivors and the campaigners like yourself, that you get the space and the dignity you should be accorded on Friday at that very important memorial. But you've been doing it, as I know, every year for so long. Margaret, do you still keep, do survivors still keep in touch, and relatives?
Oh, yes. I mean, we have regular meetings. Our latest meeting would have been, I think it was the 20th of April, and that was in Dublin. And we've had several meetings in Monaghan in preparation now for the ceremony there on Friday.
Yeah.
We have a ceremony in Dublin at 12:30. We've Mass, first of all, in the Pro Cathedral at 10:30, which will be celebrated by the Archbishop of Dublin.
Wow.
And then at 12:30, we have the wreath-laying ceremony, at which this is a very special one because President Michael D. Higgins and Sabina Higgins will be present.
Great.
And the Taoiseach and the Lord Mayor and the Taoiseach.
Yeah.
And the Cathair League from Monaghan are going to be at both ceremonies as well.
And that's always been a feature of the service that I always found extraordinarily moving and dignified. It all was. But you always insisted that somebody from Monaghan be there, and that Monaghan, what happened in Monaghan an hour and 15 minutes later on that for same Friday night when 7 people were killed by a car bomb, that should be always remembered as well. And I know Monaghan remember Dublin as well in their memorials. Where stands the campaign, Margaret, in terms of trying to find out, even though people, I think most people know it was the Glen Ann gang, and their whether there was collusion will it ever be determined? But where stands the campaign now in terms of unanswered questions?
Well, there are a number of avenues at the moment, Joe. One of them is Operation Denton. I think it has been mentioned very much on Barry Lennon and Kieran O'Connor's programme.
Yeah, excellent and, podcast.
And that is, it's nearing completion, and we hope that it will be published by the end of the year, or it may, I suppose, these things inevitably overrun, so it may well be the first quarter of 2025 when it's published. And we're very hopeful about the outcome of that inquiry, because according to the to John Boucher and his successor now, Serene Livingston, they are getting all the documents they require, or that they think they have them anyway, from MI5 and MOD, etc. So that is one avenue, and that will be very important. And they will be there also on Friday. And then we also have the Police Ombudsman for Northern Ireland. Her report is due out also in the coming months. That has been continuing for several years. Now, her remit is limited to investigating the wrongdoing of the police, whereas Operation Denton has a wider remit in that it can investigate the UDR and the British Army, etc. So that's the second avenue. So then the third avenue is our civil case, and that's been ongoing for many years, and we've been thwarted at every turn by the British government there. Yeah. They took a challenge last November to try to stop us getting into the High Court on jurisdictional grounds and time limits. Mm-hmm. And I'd just like to mention the late Derek Byrne, who came up to Belfast. He was determined to come up for that court case on the 13th of November. And it was the worst day of the year. The wind and rain was just terrible. And he was so pleased to be able to make it. And that was on a Monday. And sadly, Derek passed away on the following Saturday morning.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so he was the very first survivor to get involved in the campaign. So I knew Derek for 30 years, basically.
Yeah. Margaret, thank you so much. And Justice for the Forgotten, you'll get all the information you want. Just Google Justice for the Forgotten. Ida Byrne and your mom, Ida White, and your dad is still with us as well, isn't he, Ida?
He is, John.
Great, fair. He must have been in a terrible state, worry and distress. He wasn't too far away. I just see a nice of the many texts, and I want to express my admiration for Ida the mother and Ida the daughter.
Oh, thank you very much.
The two Idas.
Thank you, Joe.
The two Idas. The two Idas.
Or Little Ida, as I was known.
Little Ida. Well, Little Ida and Mammy Ida, for their calm look at their life, and their calm look at their life-changing experience. It's a lesson for
thank
us all.
So
and it's a reminder
you,
of the
Dad.
Horror of what went on.
Thanks you,
indeed.
Joe.
Thank you. Mind yourselves, Ida White and Ida Byrne and your families. Back after this break, and Margaret, of course, Margaret Irwin. Joe with RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Currie. Visit one of our 44 stores across Ireland for quality curtains and bedding at great prices. Find your perfect style today.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Today on the programme, a number of people asked who were involved in the bombing and survived, obviously, were asking us about other people. We were asked about Dennis Kenny. And Dennis worked in Lenehan's of Talbot Street. And one of his colleagues who survived was asking and wondering how Dennis, who was injured in the bombing as well, how he has fared. And then other people were asking about the paper seller, the young paper seller on the corner of Gardiner Street and Talbot Street, which is only feet from where the bomb was. And he was in a lot of the photographs at the time because paper sellers, and there's still a few of them, thank God, around Dublin, but they would have all the newspapers in the railings there and had a little stand. And that man is called Brendan Hart. Brendan, good afternoon.
How are you, Joe?
Well, how are you?
I'm good. Still here.
Still here, thank God. Your memories of 20 years ago this Friday, Brendan.
50 years ago, Joe.
50, sorry. I'm looking at your age. You were 20.
It's okay, Joe. Yeah. Listen, my memory, it happened so quick. we heard a noise, you know. We used to sell a lot of newspapers there. I knew a lot of the people in the street, Goynies, knew all the staff in Goynies, because I'd been there 2 or 3 years, and had a good little stall there, good, made a good living. And somebody said to me there was some bomb going off. I think it was the one in Parnellsea. It was a noise.
Yeah.
And then suddenly this happened. And I honestly, I didn't know what it was. I was in shock. I thought it was something that came from the sky.
Yeah.
And I started to run. I don't know where I was running to or running from. But then I realised I had to look around, and it was a terrible sight.
And which corner were you on? Were you on?
I was opposite Goynies. But you see, the Allied Irish Bank were in Talbot Street, and then next door was Goynies.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So I was opposite that, you know.
Okay,
the bomb was actually outside. It was kind of outside O'Neill's shoe shop at the time. O'Neill had a shoe shop there.
Yeah.
So it was probably 4 shops up from where I was standing.
But I'm thinking, are you looking into Talbot Street at that stage, or was your back?
I'm standing at the corner of Talbot Street and Guernsey, but I can face and Goynies nearly.
That's right, Todd.
But the car was off. A lot of people thought the bomb was on Goynies side, but it wasn't.
Yeah, yeah.
The car bomb was on the opposite side because the damage seemed to. Goynies got the worst of the damage, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So,
I kind of ran.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Which way did you? I know you thought it was something that came out of the sky. What did you do then? You ran.
I just ran, and then I realised where was I running from, and then I had to think for a second and come back because the stall I had was my business. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And even though the papers were all over the place, I sold a lot of magazines and stuff. And I was in shock, but I remember seeing a guy called Joe O'Neill. He had a shoe shop just there.
Okay.
And he had a lot of injuries, and he came down to talk. He was a customer of mine, and he had a lot of injuries, and he was from Northern Ireland. And I remember saying to him, you've got to get into an ambulance. You know, I didn't have a scratch. I couldn't understand how I didn't have a scratch, because I was nearer. There was a guy who sold newspapers at Kelly's Pub, which was closer to Eamon Street.
I know, further down,
He was hit by flying glass.
Wow.
And I was closer to it, and I didn't have a scratch, you know. So I obviously realised how lucky I am. But Mr O'Neill, he was, because he always called Mr then. We didn't say Joe O'Neill. Right? When you saw Mr, dismiss, all the people who worked at Goynes, we all called him Mr because they were customers. But Joe O'Neill said, you know, I haven't got a scratch. And we were looking around. It was a horrible, horrible sight to look around and see what was going on. But he was actually taken to the hospital. And I remember him telling me later on, he's some bad injuries, but he recovered from them. He's passed away now.
Yeah.
But he'd recovered from his injuries, and he always said to me, they pushed me aside in the hospital because he heard his accent, the Northern Ireland accent. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
So they thought he was part of it, and he wasn't. But one of the nurses knew him, which was great. And one of the nurses remembered him from somewhere and got him, and he went in, he was sorted, you know. So I always remember him telling me that story.
And Brenda, when did you realise this was a bomb? This was a car bomb, because there had been car bombs, especially in Northern Ireland, long before
there
that.
There had been, but it wasn't something you thought about.
Yeah.
I never thought about it. I didn't, even though, I mean, later on after the bombing, I remember I went back selling newspapers the next day, and they told us to watch out for Northern Ireland cars parking, and we did. Yeah. We always looked for them, but it was forgotten about days later.
Yeah.
As far as I was concerned. It just seemed forgotten about, you know.
But people yesterday,
Cars Park.
And how you came up yesterday was a lot of people talked about, unfortunately, the bodies at the bottom of Talbot Street. Some of them had to be covered by your newspapers to afford them some dignity.
I think it was just blown that way. It was kind of that way. I was married, I was young, I had a young child at the time, and I wanted to go home and check that they were okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was in shock for days later, you know. But I went back to work, you know.
You have no choice, you're working for yourself. But Brendan, did you realise immediately that there was so many people dead?
No, I did not realise. Did not, no. I've seen people with cuts and bruises and trying to help each other. No, I didn't realise. I suppose, shock again, you know.
It's just,
I suppose you need to be trained and something like that to go and do the right thing, I suppose, or help people as much as you can, you know. But for me, I was, you know, I really thought it was a bomb from the sky. When I look back, I think how naive I was, but I was young, you know.
Am I right in thinking you were in the Evening Herald the following day, the paper you were selling?
I was, yeah. So I was interviewed. I was in a few newspapers after. Yeah. I was interviewed by a few people. A guy, I don't know if you remember him, I think he's gone now, Cathal Shannon. Do you remember that guy?
Lovely guy. Brilliant, brilliant journalist.
Lovely guy. He interviewed me for RTE and that when we spoke about, and we came down Talbot Street and, you know, and I'm going to go in. I'll go in on Friday and have a look around again and count me blessings, Joe, as
count
they say, you know.
Well put. Well put. You sound great, Brendan. You sound good, and
I'm all good, Joe. Thanks.
Yeah, and your family as well, I hope.
All good.
And that baby you were thinking of 50 years ago, I hope he or she has grown up pale and hearty.
She's nearly 51 now.
Well done.
Joe, I tell people my kids are older than me.
Okay, they said. Well, you sound younger than 51, Brendan. That's all
thank
I
you,
say
Joe. I appreciate that. Yeah. Thanks very much.
And you mind yourself.
Appreciate
that. That's Brendan Hart. Brendan Hart. Hugh, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
It was the day. That's what people are doing, those who were there.
Yeah. I was, the bus strike was on, and the factory I was working for was a ladies' clothing factory. And the boss asked me, could I organise something for the staff to go home? I was driving for the company, so I organised a minibus from Tom Maloney in the airport, and we used to drive the staff in the morning. I picked them up in the morning and brought them home in the evening. And that night, we finished at 5 o'clock. I drove down and was driving around to the Dandy Garage. I normally came down to Gardiner Street, turned in at Guyanese there, up to the Pro Cathedral, up to North Arrow Street, turned right and right again into the Dandy. And that's to fill up for petrol for the week, because it was near the weekend and I'd running short of fuel. But anyway, I got to the corner of Gardiner Talbot Street. I got the nose of the van into Talbot Street, and then the lights went green for the straight ahead. And the guy behind me kept blowing for me to go because I was blocking his way.
Okay.
So I straightened up again and I went on straight. I got two cars up and the next minute the whole street blew out.
Oh, God. Yeah.
And I would have been up at O'Neill's Book. I would have been two cars or three cars up in Talbot Street if I had turned the corner.
And did you know what happened, Hugh? Did you realise...
There was one of the guys that worked. He was a tailor in the clothing factory. Was a male, Sean. I can't think of his name. Sean. I'll remember his name. But anyway, I used to communicate him with a slip of paper. You know those little post-it stickers.
Yeah,
along
the
journey home, I'd be talking about this, that, and the other. And he was deaf, you see. So I immediately. When I heard the bang, I looked around in my mirrors. I seen all the smoke coming out. I said, my God. So I just wrote down a thing to him because he was startled, which I thought was strange because he was deaf. And I just said, I think it's a gas, man.
Okay.
Did you feel it? And he wrote down on the piece of paper straight away and handed it back to me. He says, I heard it.
Okay.
So... that's one of the poignant things for me. But if I had gone around that corner, I had 10 people in that minibus, we were gone.
Yeah.
Completely gone. So we just carried on, basically, and I had to go to Cabra, I had to go to Cadbury's, Edenmore, Raheny, all around there, Coorock. And, that was it.
Yeah. And I want to, thanks indeed, Hugh. I want to go to Monaghan now because I mentioned Monaghan a few times already, which was a car bomb there 75 minutes later on that Friday night, May the 17th, 74, 50 years ago. Dominic Meehan, good afternoon.
Good evening, Joe.
And I know you were 16 at the time, but you were one of the first on the scene. And when did you realise one of your relatives had been killed, Dominic, in Monaghan?
Didn't know it until the next day, Joe. When the names were started to be released of the people who were deceased.
Yeah. And what are your memories of that night?
Well, my memories were very clear, Joe, in the fact 17th of May in 1974, at 2 minutes to seven. That's the time the bomb exploded.
Okay.
So what I do recollect was I remember seeing a blue flash.
Right.
There was a strong sun, and then there was a bang, a lot of bang. I actually thought, Joe, that it was a gas cylinder that exploded because my neighbour sold Keller gas.
Okay.
So as I discovered, it wasn't. So one of my family members, Anne, had fainted. I lifted her and put her in a chair. And I went to, my father was owned a barbershop two doors down from our house. My mother was a hairdresser. And I went to check on my father because he was in the advanced stage of multiple sclerosis.
Okay.
So my father was fine, being the person he was, a very cool man. So I went off and I ran towards the Dawson Monument into Church Square. I seen a grey escort car, RIU 82.
Mm-hmm.
It was in fire, and there was also another vehicle there as well. Just as I got to that vehicle, I met John McQuaid carrying Tommy Crogan. Tommy Crogan, when I looked at Tommy, he was just like a rag doll, is the best way I could describe it. I went by John McQuaid, and I went to the assistance of Archie Harper.
Yeah.
Archie Harper had serious head injuries. Other people came along, and they started to assist to dealing with Archie's injuries. I immediately ran towards the bar, which was Greason's, which was owned by the Patton Company, a very big company in Monaghan Town at the time, and a very a big employer. When I entered the bar, I lifted a man, and that man was Tommy Campbell, as I later found out, for the reasons of being told about the injuries. So my brother came in behind me, Brendan Meehan, and he told me to run back to the house and get some sheets so we could cover some of the people who were deceased. We were putting one of the McNally brothers onto a door who had serious right facial injuries around the eye in that area. We were putting him in the door to carry him out, and we were told that there was a second bomb. So I evacuated. I was 16 years of age. And just at that point, the emergency services started to roll in.
Yeah.
And I really must commend the emergency services on the day, such as the Auxiliary Fire Service, AFS, the Regular Fire Service, the Retained Service, the Ambulance Service, on Garda Síochána. When Jack Midlone's cafe was very badly, it was burnt. My brother Brendan and another gentleman, I think it might have been Brian Swift, I'm not sure, took Jack out of that burning cafe. Jack was put into a patrol car and brought to Monaghan General Hospital by Garda, Eamon Flynn. So the day that was in it, it was a horrific sight. I recall seeing a man on the right-hand side before I ran into the bar who was lying dead on the footpath. The day that was in it, it was very hard to, you know, at the time, Joe, you didn't realise what was after happening.
Of course.
And no different than anybody else. Like, you just go into overdrive.
Yeah.
So my brother happened to be doing his leaving cert that year, and he was studying up in the local CBS, Michael. And when he came running down from the school, he met a girl who was Eileen Travers. Eileen said to my brother, "If you see our Jackie down there, tell him to come up home." Now, as it turned out, Jackie was killed in the bomb. When I look at the like of Peggy White, left a very young family behind, and her husband Joe. And I look at Paddy Askin, who left a very young family behind, a set of twins that were 2 years of age, and two sons. And I look at George Williamson, who was a farmer in town on his business.
Yeah.
And when you look at Archie Harper, who owned a shop, and his business in Monaghan that day was to go to the cash and carry. His daughter went up to visit. her aunt, and Archie was waiting for her to come back.
Okay, Dominic, thank you so much for that. I know it's difficult for listening. It's difficult for survivors like yourself, but it's really important that this is never forgotten, and the nearly 4,000 people that were killed in the Troubles in our lifetime, Go to meet them all, good Dominic, back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Revamp your home this May with our fresh new curtain and bedding designs. Discover comfort and style for every room.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Violet Shields, Violet, good afternoon. Earlier we were listening to Ida White and indeed her daughter Ida Byrne, both of them. And for it was the first time of all the programmes we've done on the Dublin bombings where Ida remembered being thrown into the air by the bomb in Talbot Street. As you said, floating in the air and slowly. You were in Talbot Street.
Hello, Joe. Yeah. I worked in Parnell Square and the bus strike was on and... My husband and I had bought a house in East Mall, so we were two or three married, 2 years married.
Okay.
So the bus strike being on, no car, we had to walk home. My friend worked with me, and she lived in East Mall. So we had we were walking home, and literally just walking by Guy and his shop, we got across the traffic lights and heading down the road, and this explosion just came. How we didn't get hurt. Bombs, people, God rest us all. They were blown up in the air, cars and smithereens, and we just kept running and running and running until we got home to East Wall. And I didn't literally have a splinter. And to this day, I don't know how I was saved. And we had no car. My husband worked in CIE and he, Rod Stone, in the stores, he heard about the bomb and he ran home from Fisborough to East Wall to make sure I was okay. And to this day, it was a miracle. I was not hurt. We just kept walking home. My friend and I, Catherine, lived across the road from me, and I thank God we just kept praying and walking and walking and walking and running and walking. And I was 3 months pregnant at the time.
Oh my God.
And I didn't know. In those days, you wait for the doctor. Everything was perfect. But I thank God to this day that I literally don't know how I didn't even get a splinter. We ran all the way home, right by the bomb.
And Violet, did you know? Because you walked past Guiney's at this stage. You've gone a few feet and you're now crossing the road and to the other side in the bomb. Did you know it was a bomb? What did you think it was?
We the noise was horrendous. We guessed it was. And the cars, there was cars out parked around the roads at those times. And all we kept saying was, Jesus, God, get us home. And the cars, as in, there's a car, that might go off.
Yeah.
And we just kept running towards, I think it was Conley State. Ran all the way home. And then, God bless, my husband just passed away 2 months ago, Paul Shields. And
he ran from Broadstone.
He ran all the way home. Yeah. And when we got home, he just so thrilled. We sat down, I think I was in shock, that I sat down and then I just peeled the potatoes, made the dinner, and we just sat in shock.
Yeah.
Not even able to talk about it. And not a splinter. And God bless those poor people.
Yeah.
I couldn't look at the injuries. We just kept our eyes straight and ran. And my friend Catherine Dynam was with me, and she was okay. And it was just a miracle,
A miracle in that sense. And the baby came along, I hope.
Perfect. Then I had Keith, Eric and Linda.
Okay.
And four grandchildren after that.
Well done.
Jake, Josh, Tig and Grace.
I can still hear...
They were the... They would never have been born.
I know, exactly, but I can still hear the upset and the trauma in your voice about what happened that day 50 years ago this week. Thanks indeed, Violet. Yeah. Let me go to Fred. Fred, good afternoon. You were on the other side of the city. You were up near South Leinster Street behind Trinity where the third bomb went off. What are your memories, Fred?
Well, as most people know, it was about 5:30. I was 23 at the time. I was working in a public relations firm, which was part of Arrow Advertising, which was at the bottom of Berrien Square and Hollis Street there at the time. It's gone now. And it being the time it was, I was up in the very top story of the building.
Okay.
And we had a well-appointed bathroom there where you could clean yourself up and this sort of thing. We were all getting ready for Friday night.
Yeah.
Basically, and having a shave and this, that and the other. And there was this kind of dull crump. It wasn't like you see in special effects in movies or anything like that. It was a very dull thud.
Yeah.
And I could see over the top of the roofs, of course, from where I was. And at the bottom of, towards Leinster Street there, there was this plume of sort of dirty brown smoke started to grow up. And I went down to a colleague of mine, and we went down to the little car park, which was attached to the office, and jumped on an old motorbike I had, and went down to see what was going on, basically. And we must have been there within 2 or 3 minutes. There was no one there. The thing I remember most is the glass. Yeah. Glass was all over the place.
Of course, yeah.
And the silence. Yeah. It was, there was a kind of, you were like in a dome of silence, if you know what I mean. And there was the outside world and there was this world that you were suddenly in.
And Fred, how soon did you realise so many people had been killed in the city centre?
Didn't at that stage know about the other bombs at all.
Yeah.
Okay. We were at work all day, you see. There was no mobile phones or anything that time, you know.
I remember. You were in South Leinster Street. I was up off. Yeah. I was in Clarendon Street at the same time. And you're right, you wouldn't have known because of the world that was then with no mobile phones.
Different worlds, completely.
Yeah. Okay.
But we were there for a while. There was nobody else there. We're walking around. There was a certain numbness began to set in. I remember seeing all the windows blown out of an office block beside me, and there was a kind of, like, I thought it was a mannequin. And I was trying to figure out where was there a clothes shop around there. I didn't imagine there was one.
Okay.
And then towards the railings of Trinity College there, I could see this burnt-out chassis of a car.
Yeah.
And it was mangled. It was in a terrible condition. And obviously that was the bomb car.
Yeah.
And between that and the railings, I always remember this. There was a pair of high women's boots, which were the fashion that time.
Of course.
And they were standing one beside the other, perfectly upright.
Good God.
And it was surreal image.
Yeah, well, that is an image to ponder on. That is an image of the horror that was going on at that time. Okay, Fred,
absolutely.
I've got good amino margaret. That's Fred Johnson back after this break. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Visit one of our 44 stores across Ireland for quality curtains and bedding at great prices. Find your perfect style today.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RTE.ie. I'm also remembering 3 or 4 years ago, in the middle of COVID, there was no... The families, for obvious reasons, weren't allowed... gather on this coming Friday during COVID for 2 years because of COVID, and it's the only time that many of the families have missed through no fault of their own the actual commemoration. So Friday takes on an even bigger role. 10:30, the Mass in the Pro Cathedral, and then half 12 at the junction of Talbot Street and Amiens Street, Uachtaráin na Héireann. Michael D. Higgins, August Sabina will be there. The Taoiseach, Simon Harris, will be there. Lord Mayor of Dublin, Dáithí de Roiste, will be there. And it'll be a very moving event, and most importantly, the relatives and survivors and campaigners will be there. Jill Kenny, going back to Talbot Street, your two aunts, your great aunts, Josie and Maggie.
Hi, Joe. Yeah, they had a sweet shop there on Talbot Street, and like it was an amazing shop. Everything was weighed. The sweets were in jars. The loose chocolates and boxes and everything. And then we used to go in every Friday to help them. In the shop, we'd be sweeping
busy,
floors.
Busy
and
day,
up.
Yeah.
And then Mam would go off to do the shopping in Dunn's North L Street, and my old brother and myself would be out playing on the street. And we'd just be hanging out with the other kids in the area, and we'd call into the local businesses for chats and into the different shops, the pet shops, Hector Gray's. And then Dad would finish work. He was a guard up in the Phoenix Park. And then we'd all have tea, help Joe Slock up and head home. But then 50 years ago, when I was 7, I was invited to a friend's birthday. And I didn't want to miss this one because I really liked Deirdre. So everything was delayed. Instead of Dad collecting us in town, he called to Deirdre's house to collect me. And Mam and my brother Carl were in the car. And they were kind of annoyed because of the change of plans. So when we were leaving the house, we heard a kind of a loud booming bang coming from the city centre. And we didn't know what it was. But then as we drove closer to town, we heard more bangs, and you could see that Mam and Dad were really panicked. We sped in down Summer Hill and turned onto Talbot Street, and there was, like, we knew there was something seriously wrong. There was grey smoke and there was glass everywhere. Dad was driving so slow because nothing was moving. It was just so still and so eerie. And all the windows were blown out of every building, and people that we knew were just lying on the street. It was just utter devastation.
Yeah,
but I don't know, everything it just kind of stopped, you know.
That's been the predominant image. That's the silence, the numbness, the time stopping, and but then the realization of the unspeakable horror that had prevailed. And did the shop continue after that, Jill?
Oh, it did. Years after. But it was a big clean-up operation. But Aunt Jose was lucky because she was in a room at the back when the explosion happened. So all the glass came in top of her. So when we went running into the shop, she was just lying there with shards of glass and bleeding from wounds. There was just rubble everywhere. But then I headed out. Mam and Dad were looking after her. Then I headed out and walked up to O'Connell Street, and it was just unbelievable. Like, it was just like a scene from a war movie. People were just lying on the ground everywhere. It was absolutely awful. And then I came back down, and they were stopping people now from going down to Talbot Street. And a guard stopped me, and I was saying, like, no, my dad is down there helping people. And so he didn't know what to do with a 7-year-old. And so he let me back down, and so it was then all the guards and the ambulances and the fire brigades arrived. But then, it's just utter devastation. Yeah. It was awful at the time.
And as you say, your two aunts, your great aunts, said, well, we were lucky, and a lot of people today, Violet saying she was lucky, unfortunately, on that day and during that time. Thousands of people weren't so lucky. They were killed in the Troubles, and then countless thousands were injured and are suffering, as we've heard earlier till this day. Thanks indeed, Jill Kenny. I want to go to Monaghan and Sharon Askin. Sharon, good afternoon.
Hello, how are you?
You're on WhatsApp, which is a great clarity. Your father, unfortunately, was killed 44 years ago this Friday.
50 years ago this Friday.
50 years ago, yeah. He was 44. What age were you, Sharon?
Myself and my twin, we were only two. We were turned two in the March. So we have no memories of our father at all. You know, my brothers were 5 and 6 at the time, so they can remember him taking them out in the tractor and learning them how to drive it, you know. They thought this was a great track. But with one photograph with him.
Oh, God.
And that's it. You know, it's...
Paddy, 44 years of age, he's working in the sawmill in Monaghan. Where was he when the bomb went off, just before 7 o'clock?
I think him and his friend had actually just went over to Grecian's Bar. They would have got their paid checks changed there. Plus, I think they would normally went over for a pint or two after work on a Friday evening, you know?
Of course, yeah.
Like any good man would, you know?
Yeah, and Grecian's Bar, as it was mentioned earlier, was at the heart of the
Brougham was parked outside it, yeah. So it was.
And you just your family, Sharon, who was in your family at the time? Because your father was very young at 44.
Yeah,
and you were very young at two.
Yeah. There was the two boys, they were 5 and 6, myself and my sister Sonia, we were 2, and then there was my mother there as well. And she was left to her 4 children under 10, so it wasn't a nice experience, you know. It was quite a shock for her.
Yeah.
So it was.
And yeah, I presume over the years, given that your father was so young, that he was missed, and I'm thinking of, because of the time that's in it and the time that was in it then, the first Holy Communions are on this week all around Ireland. So he wouldn't have been at your communion,
confirmation or anything like that. And then my brother's wedding, my sister's wedding, he wasn't able to give her away or anything, you know. So it was times like that, it hit harder, you know, for the family. But we had a very strong mother and she done everything she could for us, and We missed out on nothing. She would have made him proud.
And then this Friday evening in Monaghan, what's happening, Sharon?
We have a wreath-laying ceremony in Monaghan, and it's starting about 6:45. So we have the president coming to lay the wreath, but before that we have families meeting the president at 5:30.
Okay.
So he wanted to meet us privately. So that's happening beforehand. And then there'll be not so much a service, but there'll be a celebration. You know, I myself have to read all the names of the Dublin victims. There'll be 2 local pipe bands playing as well. So it'll not be all based on sadness. There will be joy there as well.
Yeah.
You know, we'll have to remember them in happy times as well as that time.
And I'm thinking the names you'll have to read out. You'll have to read out Baby Doherty, the child of Colette, who was coming back from the child that was due to be born hours later, believe it or not.
Yeah. Oh, no. Things like that hit hard.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bad enough event, but when you bring children and babies into things like that there, it's not right. It's a terrible atrocity. Like, it's just...
Yeah, and I'm thinking of the other children killed in the Dublin bombing. I'm thinking of Jacqueline and Mary O'Brien. There was only a year between them, and her whole family left this earth on that evening 50 years ago. And we've tweeted, with your permission, the photograph of your lovely dad in his short sleeves holding...
Home from work.
Yeah, and the twins he's holding.
Gosh. Yeah, that's myself and my sister, yeah.
Even then you were a handful.
That didn't stop me.
And well, God rest them. God rest them, Sharon. And I know, and the president is going to both memorials on Friday,
that's right.
God willing.
Yeah.
And that's really important. And thank you for, I know you remember your dad every day. You also remember your mother and what she had to go through as a result of his untimely death, and which happened to so many people. Sharon Askin, thanks indeed. That's Sharon Askin in Monaghan. Thank you. Ashton Grufferty was in sound. There's more coming in, as you can imagine. And people want to remember the human aspect and the inhumanity of what happened on those days. Over nearly 40 years, between 69 and 98. Ashton Grufferty was on sound. Broadcast coordinator was Stephen Higgins. Tara Locker Grant produced. Annette Egan is the series producer. And Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Revamp your home this May with our fresh new curtain and bedding designs. Discover comfort and style for every room.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.